The background I would like to give you is that Avram and Sarai, chosen by God and told they'll have many people descend from them, have gone on in life, and Sarai has been barren. She has not born any children. And so with, we assume, some consideration in depth, she says to Avram, "You may take my servant girl, Hagar, and take her to yourself, and perhaps she will bear you the son that you need to continue the nations." And if you put yourself in that mindset for a moment, that was a huge decision. However, on we go with today's scripture, which is, by the way, widely debated, the meaning of it in Jewish Torah study. What does it mean that Sarah laughed? Okay, from Genesis 18, 1 through 5, if you wish to find it, it is in your pew Bibles, page 14. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under a tree. Let me bring you a little bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that, you may go on since you've come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you said." And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of choice flour. Knead it and make cakes." Abram ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree while they ate. And they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "There, in the tent." And then one said, "I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I've grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old?' Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh," for she was afraid. And he said, "Oh, yes, you did laugh." And from Genesis 21, 1 through 7, the Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son, whom Sarah bore him. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And now, Sarah said, God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. And she said, who would ever have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And here ends the reading for today.
Thank you, Faith, for including that beginning part, because I was going to mention that connection. So now you know there's more to the story than just what we see today. So Abraham, sitting by the oaks of Mamre, at the entrance of his tent. This brought to me remembrances of my grandmother and I sitting under a fig tree. And frequently we would be, I guess that's why they were called string beans. Now they're more often called green beans. But we would frequently be sitting there stringing the string beans and getting them ready for dinner. And sometimes we would just be sitting there and just enjoying the evening, maybe after dinner or before dinner. They lived in Redlands, California, which my grandmother used to say, I live on the prettiest street in the most prettiest town of our country. So if you look up here, you see a picture of the tree that was mentioned. So Abraham, sitting by the oaks, that also made me wonder if he was sitting there in contemplation, perhaps in meditation. I wonder if he had experienced some unknown sense of something to come. And as we look at the picture again, it doesn't look like any of the oaks which I lived with when I lived on Oak Grove Avenue in San Marino, California. And it looks nothing like the productive, fruit-bearing shade fig tree that I sat with with my grandmother. And if you look very carefully, you can see there's young shoots shooting out of the very bottom of the trunk. I find this extremely interesting. Now, my spiritual being wants to project onto this tree with its very aged trunk and mangled branches. My spiritual being wants to project onto it as a source of aged wisdom. It's surely lived much longer than we have. So let's think what that tree, which still lives, by the way, with much help keeping it propped up with metal support in the city of Hebron. I've been to Hebron. I did not get to see the oak tree there because Hebron, which is a Palestinian city, is heavily guarded with Israeli soldiers everywhere, and there's barbed wire that keeps those of us who go on pilgrimages from going wherever we would like to go. Hebron is one of the few cities that is being taken over by settlers who are funded by the Israeli government. They have even taken over at least one hotel. Hebron does not get much tourism anymore, which makes me feel very sad because Hebron was where Abraham took his wife's body to be buried. I did not get to visit that site either because of the difficulty of getting around in the city. We know, don't we, that Abraham was considered the father of three faith traditions. These three faiths, Christian, Jewish, and Islamic, all center on one God, although we have many names. Even in Christianity, we have many names for God. Presently, in the lands that Abraham called home, Arab, Palestinian Christians, Bedouins, Armenians, Muslims, dark-skinned Jews, and others are living in angry, frightful, and deathly situations. And this was shared a bit at the peace gathering that I attended yesterday. So back to Abraham sitting close to this ancient oak tree. We are told the Lord appeared to him, and he looked up and saw three men standing near him. And he greets them as my Lord. Three men. We believe in a Trinitarian God, most of us, right? So what does that symbolize? The Father of three faith groups. I'll just let you think on that one, and you can make your own decisions. Contemplation brought Abraham into contact with real people who he somehow instantly knew were the embodiment of our God. Now, have any of us ever had that happen? Anybody want to share? And next Sunday, I will start out the sermon with anybody who wants to share after you've contemplated this week's passage and reread it again for yourselves. He then enthusiastically offered them full, extravagant hospitality, right? How often do we offer this to strangers? Anybody want to share? Another one to think about. They then tell him that Abraham and Sarah, the unexpected good news, that they will have a son. Now, Abraham, as it said, was 100, and Sarah was thought to be approximately 90 years of age. Oops! How would we react to that news? If we even make it to our 90s or our 100s, right? Well, Sarah, as probably most wives would do, was listening as she prepared the food, and she laughed. When Abraham confronted her with that, she said, "No, I did not laugh." I think that she was in great denial that this message could really be true, right? And of course, how would we react if that news had been given to us? And that connects us to our, what we call the New Testament, the words that came after Jesus was living on earth with Elizabeth and with Mary, and the sudden news to them. And of course, Elizabeth's husband became silent, right? And Mary, she praised God. How would we react? In due time, their son was born, and Abraham named their son Isaac, which means he laughs or will laugh. And that's just as Sarah said, "God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." Do you remember the song? I know I used it years ago. And it had multiple verses, and the writer of the song, Linnea Good, said that God created everything with great love and with one word, and that one word was, ha! It was laughter. And there's just one word. See if you can sing the chorus with me. It goes,
Come on, laugh. And there's multiple verses to that song. When Lazarus comes out of the tomb, she says, this is probably what he said. Joy, laughter. Ha, ha, ha. You getting the message? This story about Abraham and Sarah was one of the verses in that song also. So what's this all about? You heard the song, There Comes a Time. Did you see the Bonhoeffer quote at the beginning? Hopefully you were looking at that. I should have printed it someplace, but you don't all have a bulletin. Are you able to get back to that just to show us the quote? Bonhoeffer is one of my heroes. It's okay if it's too difficult to go backwards. So you're there, but it's not playing? Okay, that's okay. So basically, you remember Bonhoeffer from World War II, Lutheran minister, and his values collided because he had a strong Christian faith, but he was dealing with how do we deal with terrible, terrible evil. And so he joined a resistance, and he gave his life trying to stop Hitler. He was hung about three days before the resistance took over. And in this quote, he said, he talked about how great evil is, and then he said, to not speak is to speak. To not act is to act. And so this is what I think this story tells us today, what was happening. Abraham was practicing quiet meditation or contemplation, perhaps praying as he sat by the oak in front of his tent. In this time, he heard a message from God that empowered and prepared him to receive the three men. And I said, wow, three. And then, as faith reminded us, Hagar and Ishmael. Ishmael was the son born to Abraham, and that's where these different faiths come in. We all share Abrahamic bloodline with our Muslim and Jewish brothers and sisters. So this is just the first part of There Comes a Time, is to being able to contemplate and to think about what's going on in our world. And is there a place for each of us to do just something very, very small? We have time in the present, we've had time in the past, and we will have time in the future when God might whisper to us. We just need to prepare ourselves with some times just to listen to God. I have often said that someone could prove to me without a doubt that Jesus never existed, but I would still call myself a follower of Jesus, because the idea of Jesus in the world is the role model of living in this world that I want to follow. The Jesus who turned the powers that were present during his time upside down. With love, and for the most part, with gentle encouragement and acceptance. Sometimes he got a little frustrated with his disciples, and there was the overturning the tables, you know, but for the most part, And he received especially those who were not received by others. Just as Abraham gives us the model of receiving strangers by graciously welcoming, listening to them, and sharing a meal with them. This is a model, isn't it, of how we should follow Jesus. One of my dear beloved minister friends said not too long before she died, I don't know why we call ourselves Christians. She says, I really consider myself a Jesusian. That's a Jesusian, a follower of Jesus. Now, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, which is part of my identity, has the saying, no creed but Christ. And I take that to mean the historical Jesus and the divine presence that is found in all of creation. And Richard Rohr, Franciscan, and Matthew Fox, who once was a Catholic priest, would call it the cosmic Christ, the Christ that is found in all religions, the identity of peace and love that is found in all religions, except for those that get very radical. We know about those, right? Christians have radical groups too that I do not believe in. In United Church of Christ, we have this little phrase, and this is why I came to United Church of Christ, and I'm sure I've told you that before. It says, agree to disagree. So we are here. You don't have to agree with what I say, and that's why I give you a chance to say what you're thinking. And I hope next week some of you will follow through on that. For me, that means we can have our offering bowl for the water in Africa and our lights of liberty, and I can do my work with immigrants and my work at the national level and local level for pro-peace for Palestine and Israel. And we can all agree to disagree. We can participate in what our hearts are called by God to do or to not do. And I encourage that we, when I was at a larger church, I used to say we could have a pro-choice group and a pro-life group. And they'd just be at the opposite ends of the patio area that we met, because there is some value in both of those views. Anybody want to share today? Okay, please think about this during the week. So, think about what passionately calls you to do or say or to act upon, according to where our faith tradition places you in the times in which we live. Just as Abraham and Sarah's story has showed us today, may peaceful, loving, and encouraging presence be with us all. May that be with us all in the days to come, no matter what is happening in our own lives or in the world around us. And I always say, thanks be to God. Amen.